Certified Nursing Assistants. I'm Ron Flatter, Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this Worldview Wednesday edition of the Knowing the Truth radio program. Each and every Wednesday afternoon, we look at issues in the news to look at what the Scripture has to say about these issues or look at them from a Christian perspective. And we're going to do that on the program today. I've titled the broadcast today, or the two discussions that we're going to have today, as being warnings of disaster. The first up is going to be Jamie Dean from World Magazine. Jamie has just returned from Africa, and when she was there in Africa, specifically in Sudan, she writes about, or is preparing to write, the cover story, I think, for the upcoming edition of World Magazine, and it's going to deal with this looming humanitarian crisis that is taking place in Sudan. And so we want to talk with Jamie about that issue. She's also was able to go to Egypt when she was over there as well, overseas as well. And so we just want to get her take on what's going on in Egypt. Of course, there's a lot of concern here in the United States after what the coup that took over, or the riots that took place, or the protests, I should put it, I guess, that took place in Egypt and overthrew the government. We're just unsure here in the United States as to what's coming next. There's a lot of talk about the Muslim Brotherhood and the role that they will play in Egypt. So it'll also be good to get a firsthand account from Jamie of her sense of what's taking place in Egypt currently. And then finally, you just heard on the news that was played, Fox News was played just before we started the broadcast, and you heard one of the stories there was related to the idea of voter fraud. Well, Jamie wrote the cover story for the last edition of World Magazine, which dealt with that issue about the battles over voter ID laws and how that is heating up. And so we may, if we have time, with the time that we have allocated to speak with Jamie, we may talk about that issue as well. On the second segment of the program today, we're going to talk about the Titanic and the Titanic warnings. Many people in our listening audience are probably aware that this past Sunday was the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic, a luxury liner. And the guest on the second half of the program is Pastor Casey Sabella. And Casey has written a book called Titanic Warning: Could This Disaster Have Been Prevented? Now, he comes at this, the story of the Titanic, from a unique angle, I think. Let me give you just a momentary background of what I'm talking about in this angle that he's coming from. The other day on television, I watched on NetGeo, you know, the National Geographic station. They had a pretty interesting program about the Titanic, and actually James Cameron was there, of course, the producer of the blockbuster Titanic movie, and they were looking at just how accurate, with what they know now, just how accurate were some of the things that they portrayed in the movie, and they were looking to correct a few of the things that they have found out since then. It was a very interesting broadcast, actually. However, at the very end of the movie, or the documentary, they made a hard left turn in the final few moments of the broadcast, and they said that this is a lesson, the Titanic is a lesson about, wait for it, global warming. that we are headed for the iceberg of global warming, literally putting it in these terms, and that if we don't right this ship in America here, if we don't realize about the disaster that's coming over global warming, then it's going to be too late and we're going to strike the iceberg. And they used all of these this type of metaphor in describing global warming. Well, we're going to do something a little bit different than that. I think that that doesn't really hold water, no pun intended, that whole argument. But we're going to take the issues associated with the Titanic, and we're going to look at the church today and the warnings that are being given here in America about where America is heading itself, and some of the warning signs and how we are reacting to those warnings that come. You know, there were a number of ships in the region when the Titanic sank, and they had warned the Titanic. You know, the California was there and the Carpathia and other ships were in the area there. We're going to talk about the warnings that were given and how those warnings were heeded or disregarded. It's a very interesting look at the entire Titanic situation. So there's where we're going in the second part of the broadcast today. To the phone line now, Jamie Dean is up first. Jamie, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio program.
Thanks, Kevin. It's great to be here.
Thank you very much for joining us. I understand you just got back recently from Africa. Is that correct?
I did. I got back about a week ago, spent about a week in Egypt and almost a week in South Sudan.
Well, that's a long trip and I imagine in some cases a difficult trip. So you probably need about a week to get back on the ground, get your feet back on the ground and recuperate.
That's right. I think I need 2 weeks, actually. But I think I'm getting there. Yeah.
All right. Tell us, you know, I mentioned that first up, we wanted to talk about Sudan. Explain the situation to us. What is taking place in Sudan, specifically about the humanitarian crisis, the looming crisis that is taking place there? What's going on?
Well, there's a lot of complicated things going on in Sudan right now. As your listeners will probably remember, South Sudan declared its independence from Sudan last year. So South Sudan is its own country now, separate from northern Sudan. And there's still a lot of conflict over exactly what constitutes the border between North and South Sudan. And the main issue with that is that there's lots of oil fields right along that border region. So there's a lot of ongoing conflict between the two sides about who actually owns what. And there's been some pretty serious outbreaks over the last few days between North and South over one particular oil field right along the border region that the North says belongs to them and the South says belongs to them. So there's this growing battle. Troops are being deployed on both sides. It really looks like a mini war of sorts could break out. Hopefully that won't happen, but it could break out. So that's one big flashpoint that's happening right now. In the meantime, there's this other crisis that's going on that's getting less attention, but it's actually an even greater humanitarian crisis. And that's happening in the Nuba Mountains, which is this region just north of the border with South Sudan. And it's a region that has lots and lots of Christians in it. It's mostly Christians that are in this region. And before the two countries separated, the people in that region were more sympathetic to South Sudan, which is predominantly Christian. Well, when the borderline was drawn, this borderline was still sort of disputed, all of a sudden these people in the Nuba Mountains found themselves kind of on the wrong side of the border, on the north side of the border. And so they have been bombed relentlessly over the last year by northern troops. There's some in the Nuba Mountains that want to have more control over their own territory. There's all sorts of things going on. But the bottom line is that northern troops are relentlessly bombing the Nuba Mountains. And what that has meant for that large Christian population is that they've been really relegated sometimes to caves and mountains. They've been unwilling to go out to their fields to plant crops or to harvest crops because they're afraid of being open targets. And so there's no food supply. Starvation is starting to set in. Whole towns have been wiped out. And you're seeing just thousands and thousands of these people flowing over the border into South Sudan, in some cases into the border with Ethiopia, and now landing in these refugee camps that are limited in supplies, and they're trying to sort of carve out an existence in this very difficult situation. They're still close to the border. So in one case, the camp that I went to has already been bombed. It was bombed in November by these same northern troops. Mm. So you have a situation where people in the Nuba Mountains are starving, and people coming to these refugee camps really don't have what they need to be able to exist. So it really is a growing humanitarian crisis.
Mm. Now, the folks that are in the Nuba Mountains, are they associated with South Sudan then or North Sudan?
Well, they now are technically located in northern Sudan once this new border line was drawn last year. Mm-hmm. But all during the 20-plus years before that, they associated themselves with South Sudan. They've always been sympathetic to South Sudan, and so they really consider themselves Southerners in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. They're certainly Christians. You know, northern Sudan is predominantly Islamic. These people in the Nuba Mountains are largely Christians. So it's kind of like they've suddenly found themselves on the wrong side of the border, at least for them, it's the wrong side. And that's part of the reason. That's not the whole reason, but that's part of the reason why they're a target for northern forces.
Boy, you would think that the border issues would have been settled or some sort of consensus would have been reached before the forming of a new country, but apparently that wasn't done.
It wasn't done. It was supposed to be done, and it was supposed to be done before the Declaration of Independence was, or their form of the Declaration of Independence was signed. It wasn't done. Then it was supposed to be done in the weeks after. It still wasn't done. And so you're seeing really a conflict that should have been resolved well over a year ago. But these oil fields are so lucrative, and both countries want them. I mean, South Sudan has lots of oil fields of its own that are clearly within their borders now. But, you know, there's still disputes over these borderline oil fields. And the North is very, very unlikely to give that up. Either side probably is unlikely to give it up. So I think we're going to see that part of the conflict continue to grow.
Now, you mentioned bombing taking place there among the folks there in the Nuba Mountains. Is it, do they have any sort of defense at all? Do they fight back, or do they have some sort of militia that defends them?
There are armed soldiers in the Nuba Mountains. South Sudan says that they are not their soldiers. These would be soldiers who, again, would be sympathetic to South Sudan. They're technically not part of the South Sudanese army. So there is an armed militia in the Nuba Mountains, but that's no defense against bombs. I mean, you know, what can they do? They certainly don't have that kind of ability to retaliate. So when these bombers come along and they just drop their payloads, you know, in the mountains, what it's doing is creating this massive amount of fear that's just keeping people relegated either to their homes or to the mountains. And so even more than the fear of getting hit by a bomb, they've created famine, essentially, because no one's willing to continue to grow food and plant crops. So it really is a famine, starvation situation, even more than violence, even though plenty of people have gotten hit by these bombs and have suffered terrible injuries. They're really starving them out at this point.
Rather indiscriminate bombing then, too. They're just more of a carpet bombing type of thing in order to instill fear. Is South Sudan democratic?
Yes. I mean, their form of government, you know, it's actually really kind of hard to put your finger on it at this point. All of that is still somewhat in flux with South Sudan being a brand new country and still a lot of issues unresolved, but it's close to being democratic as we would consider that. That's kind of how they would consider themselves.
What has the response been from the international community, and even more specifically from the United States itself, as to the plight of the folks there in the Nuba Mountains?
Well, at first it was a little bit hesitant. It was from the U.S. at least. It was a little bit, we don't know what's going on for sure. We don't know who's bombing who, kind of a thing. And now that it's become really obvious who's bombing who, and you've got these refugees flowing into these camps and saying they're bombing us, they're coming from the north and they're bombing us, the U.S. among other nations have really called on northern Sudan to quit the bombardment. The U.S. also a couple of weeks ago pledged about $26 million to the UN to help refugees who were fleeing over the border. The problem with that, in my opinion, just from what I saw in one of the largest refugee camps right over the border, is that there's really very limited resources in some of these camps, particularly in the one closest to the border. They have 30-day food rations that run out pretty quickly. They don't have enough soap. They don't have enough latrine slabs or mosquito nets, and the rainy season is about to come, so that's a very serious problem for them. The UN says they're not giving them some of these supplies, particularly things like seeds for growing crops or school supplies that they're asking for, because they want them to move farther south. They think they're too close to the border, and they want them to move farther south. The people living near the border say they want us to move 30 miles south, and that's not any safer. They're not mm-hmm. willing to go far away from their homes. They want to stay there. So it's created this situation where you've got this large refugee camp with too few supplies. We're pouring money into the UN to give them supplies. It's unclear to me exactly for these refugees in particular where that money is actually going to go, which is a serious problem.
Is there a real threat of war breaking out then between North and South Sudan, if the South even has the capabilities to respond with trying to protect these folks in the mountains? Would that be a real possibility of war breaking out over this issue?
I think there's a real possibility of war breaking out over the oil issue, yes. I mean, over this border that has not been defined. I mean, you have troops deploying on both sides right now. And you probably remember, I mean, there was this 20-year civil war between North and South Sudan from, you know, the mid-'80s until about 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And South Sudan was nearly completely obliterated during that time. They had their own army and just did this surprisingly good job of fighting off the North for a long time. So this idea that even though South Sudan is new and it's kind of scrappy and they have limited resources, they've been able to hold off the North in the past. I don't think either side wants to go to war. Both sides have very limited resources, bad economies. They're just not in a position to fight. But at this point, neither side seems to be backing down. And you'll remember, North Sudan is ruled by a president who's wanted for war crimes in Darfur. So we're not talking about the most reasonable man in the world.
Mm.
It's very hard to predict what he would do and what he would order. He's not one to back down. So I do think we should be very concerned about what's going to happen in that area.
You mentioned about there being a large Christian population, not only in that mountainous area, but also in South Sudan. Is there missionaries? Did you see and speak with missionaries in that area?
Well, again, I was spent most of my time in a refugee camp. There was one Christian group there, Samaritan's Purse, a very well-known Christian aid organization, and they are working to help distribute the food that the UN is providing, and they also have a program for malnourished children, lots of malnourished children in the camp, lots of people who don't have enough to eat. So Samaritan's Purse is trying to help with that problem. You know, what's interesting about this camp is that beyond missionaries, they really have their own indigenous pastors. A lot of pastors that were living in the Nuba Mountains and started getting bombed walked to Yida, which is what the camp's called, Yida. They walked there with their congregations. So you had 300 people making this trek together through the desert, through the mountains and through the desert. And when they came to the camp, they immediately set up their church. You know, they built their houses, which are little thatched huts, and then they built a big thatched hut for the church. And so there's seven churches in this refugee camp, and these pastors have sort of just picked up where they left off with their congregations as best as they can. They're trying to minister in the middle of these very difficult circumstances. It was very inspiring to see that, very encouraging, and really a great matter for prayer to remember these pastors who are laboring under these circumstances in this camp.
I was going to ask you what people could do. Obviously, you just mentioned prayer for the situation that's taking place there, and specifically the churches that and the Christians that are endeavoring to preach the gospel in the midst of that. Do they have means of income there? You mentioned the oil fields, but is there other products or some way of providing for themselves that's there in that region?
Well, there's very little in the camps in particular. I mean, the camps are an extraordinarily isolated region. I mean, the oil fields are very isolated, except for the work in the oil fields. And so this refugee camp is really in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it takes 3 hours to get to the closest town by car. In the camps themselves, you know, some of the aid groups that are there, and there are about three or four in this particular camp, have hired some of the people living in the refugee camp to help them with their work. It's a small number compared to the overall number of refugees, but that has infused a little bit of cash into a local economy. Some people did come with some money. And so some people had cash on them when they came, had some goods, so they're trading a little bit. They've kind of set up a little rustic market where they can sell whatever they do have and spend whatever little bit of cash they have. So there is some of that. They'd like to be able to plant their own crops, like I mentioned before. They know how to do it. They know how to grow food. But the UN is very reluctant to give them seeds for that. And if they don't have that in the next few weeks, it's going to be moot because the rains are going to start and they won't be able to grow these things.
Mm.
So their ability to provide for themselves is limited at this point, even though they very much want to do that. These are hardworking people who want to grow food, who want to be able to take care of themselves. Whether they'll get what they need to be able to do that is what remains to be seen.
Hmm. Well, we'll certainly be in prayer about that situation. Let me ask you about Egypt as well. I mentioned at the top of the broadcast that you also visited Egypt. Give us a little bit of a snapshot of your thoughts about what is taking place in Egypt right now.
Well, I spent a lot of time with Christians in Egypt. A lot of what I wanted to do was, you know, find out what conditions are for Christians post-revolution. And, of course, you know, Christians are understandably concerned about the direction that the country's going in. It's always been an Islamic country. Life has always been difficult for Christians in Egypt. I mean, things like building a church has taken sometimes 20 years to get the right building permits. So, they can't evangelize. There's always been a lot of difficulties. But there's a growing concern because of the growing Islamic influence in the government in particular. You know, the Muslim Brotherhood is now a political party, has the majority of seats in parliament. There's also a Salafist party, which is a very hardline fundamentalist Islamic group. They have 20% of the seats in parliament.
Hmm.
So you have a very Islamic direction in the parliament. Both of those parties are trying to field candidates in the presidential elections. So Christians are wondering if that happens, if you have this Islamic-dominated parliament and Islamic-dominated presidency, what does that mean for them in the future? They don't know. They're concerned about that. But what's interesting is that in the absence of some of the security forces that have been around for so long, you know, they really dispersed after the revolution last year, churches have really had an opportunity to reach out to their communities in ways that they hadn't before. They're seeing Muslim visitors coming to the churches for the first time in many, many years. And so there's really been this opening to reach out with the gospel to people in a way they haven't before. So they don't know how long that's going to last, but they've kind of got this philosophy, let's run as hard and fast as we can with this for as long as we can and see what we can accomplish. And they're very excited about that. So even with all the looming storm clouds, there's this ray of hope and optimism about maybe what the Lord will do in the meantime.
Well, I'm so glad to hear that because all we've heard so far out of Egypt has been just negative so far related to, as you were saying, the growing influence, Islamic influence in that country. So it is good to hear that there are groups that are trying to preach the gospel and seemingly doing a tremendous job there in that just unbelievable situation. Jamie, just very briefly, your last cover article in the or cover story for World Magazine was about voter ID laws here in this country. Tell us a little bit about what you wrote about and where that stands right now.
Yeah, well, you know, this has become a big issue during this election cycle again. Part of the reason it's become a big issue is because two states in the South, Texas and South Carolina, have passed voter ID laws, which would require voters to present photo identification when voting, and the Department of Justice has rejected those laws. States in the South have to get pre-clearance from the Department of Justice in order to make changes to voting laws. And the Department of Justice has said, well, these laws might discriminate against minorities because they're less likely to have a photo ID. So that's kind of where the heart of this controversy has been roiling recently. But it really is part of a broader discussion about the need to clean up voter rolls in the country. I mean, there's just thousands of dead voters on voter rolls all over the country. Absentee ballot fraud is huge. And there's some people saying not only should we have to show a photo ID at the polls, you should have to have a copy of a photo ID with an absentee ballot because that's where most of the fraud happens. And so there's really this struggle, this tug of war between people who say a photo ID is a really common sense approach to prevent fraud and people who say if you don't have a photo ID, it prevents you from voting. So that's kind of where the heart of the struggle is right now.
Mm. And we just had that video released not that long ago from, I forget his name again, but
O'Keefe,
right. And he actually registered to vote under Eric Holder's name, obviously, to make that point. And he repeatedly said, well, you know, I've got my ID out in the car. Do you want me to go get it? No, not necessary. We don't need it. You know, go ahead. And actually had to leave before he would go ahead and register under Eric Holder's name, obviously making the point. This system is broken badly, and for the one political party, specifically the Democrats, to be allowing that to take place and encouraging it in other ways, really, I think, is a big mistake for this country. And I hope that some steps are taken to curtail that so that we can get this thing back under control. Jamie Dean, thank you very much for bringing us these firsthand reports on a number of these issues. It's really been a pleasure to talk to you today, and we really appreciate the work you guys are doing at World Magazine.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks so much for having us.
Okay. That was Jamie Dean from World Magazine, reporter with World Magazine, just back from her trip to Africa. Boy, it's such a pleasure every Wednesday to talk with the folks from World Magazine. They bring us these firsthand reports, not just from here in the country and various locations around the 50 states, but then they also from overseas, firsthand reports of what's taking place around the world. Go out to their website, www.worldmag.com. Better yet, get a subscription for yourself. We'll be back in just a couple moments. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Would you please welcome the pride of Alexandria, Indiana, your host, Bill Gaither.
Hey, thanks, Bill, and welcome to Homecoming Radio. Do we ever have a great show for you?
You can hear some of the great Christian music you grew up with Bill Gaither's Homecoming Radio, heard every Sunday evening at 5 o'clock on Christian Talk 660 and 92.9 FM.
It's great pizza for a great price. So pack up the family and head over to Stevie B's near Walmart on Woodruff Road in Greenville. At Stevie B's, you'll find friendly faces and at least a dozen pizzas out at all times. Or you can order a pizza. They'll make it fresh just for you at no extra cost. So visit Stevie B's today.
Hi, this is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and I want to take the time to thank John, Ruth, Carlos, and the good folks over there at Stevie B's Pizza for their support of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
This is Women Today with Vonette Bright.
Nola was a refugee of a communist country. She and her two sons fled to the United States with just the clothes on their back. They became citizens. But for nearly 20 years, no one in the neighborhood befriended them. That is, until Julie felt God leading her to reach out with His love. It wasn't long before Nola and Julie became friends. She prayed that Nola would receive Christ into her heart. But it was months before Nola finally accompanied her to church, and even longer before she prayed to invite Christ in. Friend, Julie could have become discouraged and quit, but she didn't. It takes patience and love to be a true Christian friend. So like Julie, continue to pray and to show God's love to your neighbors.
You've been listening to Vonette Bright. Thank you for joining us.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into the second segment of today's program. On the first segment there, we were speaking with Jamie Dean from World Magazine about what was taking place in Sudan and the warnings that we're receiving about a pending or a looming humanitarian crisis in Sudan, specifically South Sudan, or dealing with the Christians in South Sudan. And so we were talking about the warnings that are coming about what is taking place there. And I also then wanted to switch gears and talk about the warnings that were given with related to the story of the Titanic, which was, we're now at the 100-year mark of the anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic. And so we're going to talk about that in just a moment with author Pastor Casey Sabella about his book called Titanic Warning, Could This Disaster Have Been Prevented? Before we go to that discussion, let me just give you a heads up on tomorrow, what's coming up for tomorrow's broadcast. On tomorrow's broadcast, we'll be speaking with Kurt Cameron. Kurt Cameron will be joining the program here in the beginning of the program in order to talk about his movie, the documentary called Monumental. Monumental is Kurt Cameron is talking about what the founding of this country. And by the way, Monumental is still showing over at Hollywood 20 Stadium. I think it's called Hollywood Stadium 20 is the official name, over off of Woodruff Road right here in Greenville. This broadcast goes much further than just Greenville, South Carolina. But for those that are right in this area, I do know that it is still showing over there. If you haven't got a chance to see this film, I highly recommend that you do that. Kind of a little bit of a warning in there that this is where our foundation was in this country. It was founded upon Christian principles, and he makes that case during the film, and obviously things are moving very quickly away from that in our culture and in our country today. And so if you get a chance to see that movie. So Kirk Cameron on the first part of the program tomorrow, if you've got a question or a comment. If you've already seen the movie and you've got a comment or a question about an aspect of it, shoot me an email, kevin@knowingthetruth.org. That's kevin@knowingthetruth.org, and be happy to see if we can work that into the discussion tomorrow. Up now is Casey Sabella. Casey's a pastor, and he's written a book called Titanic Warnings, Could This Disaster Have Been Prevented? And this book comes from a unique perspective because, as I was mentioning on the first part of the program before, when you study what has taken place with the Titanic, as he has, he lays that out in the first 50 pages or so of his book, you see that there are a number of warnings that were given that were basically not heeded for different reasons that were given to the Titanic about ice fields, about icebergs that were looming ahead of the Titanic. And yet there, for various reasons, these warnings were not taken seriously. Also, then, when a distress signal was given out by the Titanic to various ships that were in the region, the ships that were there responded in different ways. And so Pastor Sabella has taken these accounts, and he has likened it to the leadership in the church. Let me let him tell you about that and about what he's done in this book, and then we'll go through and talk about some of those warnings and the way they were responded to, or the response from some of these other ships. Pastor Sabella, welcome to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Good morning.
Interesting book. Why don't you spend a few moments just recounting the case of the Titanic, obviously because of the blockbuster movie that came out a number of years ago with James Cameron and others. Many people are familiar with it, but I think it would help recount a little bit of it and tell us specifically about those areas that you zero in on, the warnings and the messages that went out to the associated ships.
Sure. Thanks so much. Titanic is really an amazing account because you're talking about something that happened 100 years ago that we still are incredibly fascinated by. There was such a combination of things that happened that night and that continue to pique our interest many years after it sank. It just was, there's just so much folklore about it. Some of it's real, some of it's imagined. But as I was looking at it, when I first looked at the Titanic story, I got Ken Marshall's book that illustrated it so amazingly. The story itself just began to take a different impact on me. I just began to look at it and start to see some parallels with regards to churches. The philosophy that was on board the Titanic in terms of their leadership really had a great deal to do with the outcomes that took place that night. And that's really what is at the heart of what I share in Titanic Warning, is looking at the philosophy of leadership that we either knowingly or unknowingly adapt, which ends up determining whether a church is going to fulfill its mission to make disciples or whether it's going to simply be a church that is, in effect, a nursery for Christians.
Well, that's what I want to get to, is that that leadership discussion, the different types, or you actually define the idea of a system in your book. Talk to us a little bit about that. What are we talking about when we talk about a system or a group of philosophies, if I could put it that way, about the ministry itself? Let's start there.
Okay. Well, I should also first mention, and I appreciate you mentioning that I am a pastor, is that when I look at these issues of leadership, it's not to put the church down. In fact, they come from the opposite direction. I know that there are certain books and there are certain even movements around that are kind of designed to sort of look at the church in a negative fashion and sort of put it down for not accomplishing these things. That's definitely not the objective of this book or my contribution to it. My desire is to see the church succeed. But regarding systems, I mean, every entity that we engage ourselves with, and again, mostly unknowingly, we engage a company, for example, has a system. If you go to McDonald's, for example, just to get a Big Mac, there's a system in place. There's a philosophy of operation. There are various things that have been put in place, physical things, obviously, like machinery and everything else is all there. But all those are interrelating with a leadership philosophy. And what is their philosophy? That philosophy governs whether they're effective in getting you the Big Mac in the amount of time that they said that they're going to get it to you. So we go in there, and the only thing we're thinking about is, I just want a hamburger. I'm not really thinking about the philosophy or the system or any of that kind of stuff. I just want the result. Churches have philosophies, and they have philosophies with regards to how they manage all the pieces and parts that they have and then bring it together to either advance the kingdom of God, or whether they bring it together oftentimes to just sort of glorify themselves. You can, for example, like a church, and I know many of us are familiar with churches that can have a beautiful building, and that building can be so great to them that the entire philosophy of the church is around the building, and the building becomes more important than their mission to serve people.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a very basic example.
Right.
But it's also quite spread out as far as philosophies are concerned.
Another word that you use in your book associated with this, and people may be familiar with this term, especially if they're involved in the business world as well, but the idea of paradigm is what we're talking about, that there was this, it really, you put in your book, the Titanic story is about paradigms. Paradigms are mindsets. And so we're talking about within a church, we may think that in some way we're immune to these things because we're about the business of preaching the gospel and teaching the truths that we find in God's word. But we're not immune to this. There are philosophies or mindsets or paradigms that settle in a church, and we need to look at those things to evaluate how we are thinking about the ministry that we're involved in. And so that's what Pastor Casey Sabella does in this book. Let me remind our listening audience, we're talking about Titanic Warnings. Could this disaster have been prevented? And as we were just alluding to, we're talking about it from the area of leadership in the church, drawing some conclusions about the situation with the Titanic, the story of the Titanic, and then bringing that into the leadership of the church to say, are there some parallels here that would help us to analyze church leadership? By the way, this is put out by New Leaf Press. That's who's published this book. I'm going to give you some more information. They've actually updated some things associated with this book. I'll give you that information as the program progresses. Carry on, if you would, please, Pastor Sabella, about then let's talk about some of the mindsets in the church, how you tie this more closely to the Titanic, and what are some of the warnings that were given with the Titanic that relate to warnings that leadership should be aware of in the church?
Sure. Well, of course, you alluded to the idea that a number of warnings were given to the Titanic regarding icebergs that were coming their way. In fact, six of them from a variety of ships had messaged, you know, there's icebergs in the route that you're traveling. It's coming. It's in front of you. However, the Titanic really did, the leadership of that Titanic really didn't pay much attention to those warnings. And we think to ourselves, well, why wouldn't they? But once again, they had developed a philosophy that was built around the concept that Titanic was unsinkable. And just the belief in their minds that no matter what, icebergs included, this ship doesn't sink. Even, quote, God can't sink this ship, is some of the press that was going around at the time. And so this mindset, this idea that they were infallible, this idea that no matter what they did, they would always succeed, really governed the decisions they made that night. And then when they actually hit the disaster, they were completely incapable of dealing with it. In fact, because of that philosophy or that idea, they didn't even bother to have lifeboat drills. In fact, the builders of the ship even decided they didn't even need many lifeboats. They cut down the lifeboats from 48 to 16, which weren't adequate to take care of all the passengers because they honestly believed that the boat itself was a lifeboat. So that whole philosophy or idea that that ship couldn't sink really governed the decisions they made that night. With regards to churches, a church can think, you know, we've been in operation for 100 years or we've been doing this for X amount of years. We've always been successful. We had a great history. We have a great heritage. We have X amount of people. We have a building. We have this and that kind of thing. And we can be lulled into this concept that the church that we are attending or the church that we're leading somehow or another, even though we won't even physically say it, is in fact unsinkable. It's always going to survive. And because it's been around, and the church itself has been around for 2,000 years, and we know that the end of the Revelation ends well, we kind of consider our church as all part of that. We can't conceive of the idea that somehow our church is at fault. It's got to be other people. And that way of thinking governs the decisions we make. And when God is trying to help shape us and help make us more adaptable so that we can reach people, we ignore those things because we're the first church of New Hope Mission, and we've survived for X amount of years and we'll survive no matter what happens. It's kind of like the organization itself becomes more important than the mission we're called to do.
So that deals with the issue really of pride and thinking more highly of yourself than you ought and having that type of cavalier attitude about the warnings. I wanted to give you the opportunity to either follow that a little bit more if you wanted to get to some other deeper points that you write about, or also, what are some of the other types of attitudes that people may have?
I appreciate that. There is a lot in Titanic, and I think I'd certainly love to spend the time, but we would be remiss if we didn't really deal with some of these other things as you're alluding to. There were other ships in the vicinity at the time, and each of them, of course, all also had a philosophy and a way of operating. When Titanic was sinking, they started to send up rockets, which are universally known. You know, they're asking for help. One of the closer ships was the Californian. And the Californians saw the rockets go up but did absolutely nothing. And there are reasons for that, and I certainly talk about that in the book, but we look at it from a church standpoint, and there are churches that have become, from a philosophy standpoint, have become an idea where they just really want to get away from this bad society in which we live. And the people who attend the church really go there to sort of escape all that bad stuff that's happening in the media and the bad stuff that's happening, like you mentioned, in the Sudan and other parts of the world. And we just sort of want to be us for no more, amen. Their whole reaction to the society around them is fear. They don't think about trying to outreach to the community because the idea is we just want to keep ourselves safe from those bad people. I mean, we don't act like those people. We don't have, you know, pants around our knees, or we don't carry chains, or we don't talk funny, or any of that kind of stuff. They're always criticizing the culture around them instead of genuinely trying to reach them.
And so that was the Californian?
Yes.
And so the Californian, they estimated to be about 18 miles, right, that they could have made it there if they would have responded immediately to what took place. They could have made it there shortly after the ship had sunk, obviously saving the lives of many of the people who later drowned as a result of being in the water through hypothermia. They died from hypothermia or drowning from being in the water too long. So they could have made it there had they responded immediately.
Yes.
But they didn't. They chose to. They were somewhat nonchalant. What about the Samson was also in the region? What's the lesson of the Samson?
Well, the Samson was interesting for me because it was kind of an unknown quantity or an unknown element until relatively recently. But Samson was the closest ship to the Titanic. They estimate about 7 miles. Until recently, information became available, but the Samson was a very old ship, but it was in the area, and it was doing something illegal for that area of the ocean. They were sealing, where they were catching and killing seals. And they were doing something that was wrong. So when they saw the rockets go up on the Titanic, instead of responding and saying, okay, we need to respond because there's something going on there, they said, wait a minute, we're discovered. Let's get out of here. And unfortunately, and again, I talk about some of the details of that in the book, but unfortunately there are churches who are just simply engaged in things that are just not godly. They tolerate sin. This speaks of, actually in John's book of Revelation, Jesus talks about one of the churches as saying that they tolerated sin in their midst. They allowed things to go on that they knew were against the gospel. And there are churches which tolerate infidelity, and they tolerate gossip, and they tolerate things that are clearly spoken about in Scripture because they really are more about protecting themselves than, again, once again, reaching the lost. And we get into that in detail, too. But the Samson is really a picture of a church that is just completely is church in name only, but is really going the opposite direction. And we talk about, you know, can churches like that turn around or not? And that's one of the issues we do talk about in the Titanic Warning as well.
For our listeners' sake, let me remind them we're speaking with Pastor Casey Sabella about his book, Titanic Warning. And could this disaster have been prevented? And what he does in the book is he takes the lessons from the Titanic disaster and then he associates them with the church, both with the warnings that came to the Titanic before they hit the iceberg, many warnings that had come there that were unheeded not dealt with the way that they should have been, and then also the ships that received a message or knew that the Titanic was in trouble and what they failed to do in responding to that. Let me tell you how he does this. Well, first of all, I mentioned that it's New Leaf Publishing Group is the folks that have published this this book. You can go out there to their website to find out information about how you can get a copy. The website is www.newleafpublishinggroup.com. That's a long title, but it's New Leaf Publishing Group, all one word, .com. Just put in the word Titanic. It'll take you right to Pastor Sabella's book on its very reasonably priced on the website. Also, they sent me word that there is actually an updated version of the book, and it's a link. They gave me a link. You can search for it out on Amazon. But if you buy the digital copy of the book, it has other elements associated with it as well. It's a they've created a digital copy of this book, and they've enhanced it with videos and photos to make it much more interactive. And that new version is now available on Kindle or Nook in either one of those two formats. And it will be available, I think, for the iPad very shortly as well. So you can find out about that. You can look for that out on Amazon or get a hold of the folks there at New Leaf Publishing Group. Their number, by the way, an 800 number is 800-999-3777. That's 800-999-3777 in order to find out more about this, especially the digital copy of this book. Let me give you an example of the way that Pastor Sabella uses these texts, this illustration from the Titanic. We were just talking here about the Samson, one of the ships that's recently been discovered to have been in the area, but maybe participating in illegal activity during that time. He says here in the page 123 of his book, He says Jesus charged the Pharisees for their Samson-like behavior in Matthew chapter 23. He said unto them that they did not practice what they preached. And so here they were in this region. You know, they should have come and helped. This is part of what mariners do. They respond to situations like this. They didn't practice what they preached. They also burdened the men with loads that they were unwilling to carry themselves. They had people on the ship that were doing the brunt of the labor, but the leadership was not doing it. Everything that they did was to be seen before men. They loved the place of honor, to be greeted by titles. They struggled with what to make converts who became twice as bad as themselves. They practiced tithing but forgot justice and mercy and faithfulness. They appeared righteously outward, but inwardly they were full of hypocrisy and wickedness. All of these items are tied back to the way that the leadership of the Samson was operating. And so that's an example of what he is doing in this book. Pastor Sabella, we're down to about 4 minutes left, but I've got to get to the Carpathia, the ship that probably most of the people in our listening audience are familiar with. Tell us the lessons that are there from the response of the Carpathia leadership.
The Carpathia was 58 miles away and heard the warning and turned around immediately. Their response was amazing. In fact, Captain Rostron was himself a believer, and he stood on the bow of that ship. That ship went as fast as it possibly could go into the same ice field, and he literally was on the bow of the ship praying as the ship was moving and asking God to protect them as they went to rescue the lost. At the same time, the Carpathia was also a luxury liner, just like the Titanic, although smaller. And what happened in the process is the passengers of the Titanic gave up their paid spots, their paid rooms, and began to create a hospital-like atmosphere while the ship was moving towards the lost. And so they went from being, you know, relaxing and carrying on and just like they were on vacation, and now they became a working hospital ship, preparing, getting ready. Every person on board was getting ready to minister to those people who were hurting. And when they finally did come to that area where the passengers were, they picked up 705 passengers. They let them stay in their rooms. They ministered to them like they were doctors and nurses. They were constantly caring for the lost. And it's just a picture of the church and the way that leadership is designed to function, the way the church is designed to function. I'm not against leadership. I'm really for leadership. I'm for leadership that helps people really use their gifts to serve and outreach to those who don't know Christ.
Pastor, the final 2 minutes here of the program, I'm going this afternoon to meet with 125 pastors to talk about the Church of Jesus Christ and the call that we have in preaching the gospel message. What in a minute's time now, what is your message to pastors in the country today?
You know, we have 1,800 pastors who leave the ministry every single month. That's amazing when you think about it. A lot of pastors are burning out. They're struggling, and they're trying to follow paradigms, and they're trying to follow ideas of ministry that simply don't work. I think Titanic warning is not designed to scare pastors or make them feel bad about themselves, but help them get on the track with the kind of churches and the kind of attitudes and philosophy that is really going to help them do the jobs that they've legitimately been called to do. Titanic warning is not designed to scare people. It's designed to help people get back on track with where the New Testament says churches need to be, and that's our mission. Our mission is to disciple the nations, and we're not, unfortunately, making many disciples. A lot of attenders, but not enough disciples, and this book hopefully will add to those things that help pastors do exactly that.
Casey Sabella, thank you very much for being with us on the program today. Thank you for the illustrations that you had drawn from the Titanic disaster. Appreciate you being with us and appreciate you writing this book.
Thank you so much, Pastor. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you very much. Again, that was Casey Sabella. The book is called Titanic Warnings. Could this disaster have been prevented? You can go out to New Leaf Publishing Group. That's the website to go to, www.newleafpublishing.com. www.thewomenstoday.com to find out how you can get a copy of this book. We'll be back again tomorrow here on the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. We'll be speaking with Kurt Cameron in the beginning portion of the broadcast tomorrow about his latest film called Monumental. Have you seen it? If so, shoot me an email at kevin@knowingthetruth.org. Remember this, the Lord Jesus Christ said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." We'll see you again next time.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Life-changing teaching and talk. Christian Talk 660. WLFJ Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson on AM 660. And now also on FM 92.9.